Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, remember when we so stupidly said, I can't wait to just talk about basketball and focus on basketball?
I forgot we're talking about the Lakers, right?
It's just impossible. Like, this is now year seven of me doing some version of this, covering this team, and I will never learn. I will never, ever learn, apparently. today's show, the way it's going to go, we have to start with LeBron's response to Daryl Morey. We would be remiss if we didn't talk about that. We have to talk about Lakers' new favorite point guard, Zach Norvell Jr., who played his ass off. Sorry to Jordan Poole, who rest in peace to that poor soul. and then we have a ton of questions. We have injury stuff to get to. It's going to be a busy show. It's been an underratedly busy day. But again, it's because it's the Lakers. It is now Lakers season, and that's where we're at. Let's start with LeBron's comments here. And just to be clear, like, you and I had a back and forth on Twitter, right? And the problem with Twitter is it's literally the worst place to have those conversations.
I had in the same thread, I had somebody chastising me for being too critical of LeBron, and another person chastising me for defending LeBron.
That's usually when I'm doing my job.
Yeah, maybe. It's just like, it's 280 characters, man. It's not supposed to be the whole story. And we're such a like headline and soundbite driven society. And just stuff like this is not, you just can't do it. You just can't have. And even like in, you know, since this has popped up, I've had a lot of people that listen to the show, in fact, reach out and said, hey, I listened to the show with you and Anthony. I wanted to give my perspective. I'm from China, or I've lived in Hong Kong for 12 years, you know, stuff like that. This is my version of it. And, you know, I've been reading on it as much as I can. And even then, like, you know, I'm not the person to go to for a nuance. I'm going to do my best. This is relevant to the Lakers right now. But we're just so tilted in that, like, oh, you said this thing and, you know, it means everything that you mean. And I don't know. Yeah, it's very frustrating to deal with.
Without doing the whole, because I do think it's kind of tired to say, like, people are just like, they're looking for their next reason to be angry. Right. Which I think, that is kind of what goes on sometimes, but I also think that's sometimes a cop out for when you say or do something stupid. Not you personally, but like person X does or says something stupid, and then people get angry, and you say, "Oh, well, it's just people wanting to be angry." And it's like, no, it's possible that you or I said something dumb, or you or I spoke out of turn. It's altogether possible, and I think that's kind of what we have here with LeBron. I do think, look. And again, this is why Twitter isn't the best place to have these conversations. Frankly, I kicked myself for tweeting about it. And it was hypocritical that I tweeted about it because my advice would have been never tweet. I do think, and I'm just going to try to contextualize this as best as I possibly can, I would be remiss not to mention people who were looking for a reason to be angry at LeBron with no matter what he did. Right. If he kowtows to communism or if he kowtows or if he seems to kowtow to China in any way, shape or form, the same people who have spent the last like week or so calling out the NBA for being social justice warriors and on some aspects of society and then not others when it affects the bottom line, like those people were going to walk away from tonight. They probably looked ahead to it, frankly. The smart ones are probably looking ahead to this kind of a situation and recognizing there's no way for him to win here.
There's a lot of opportunism in instances like these that have nothing to do with like supporting Hong Kong or supporting the Chinese government's position, right? Mm-hmm. It's about like me winning my argument, which is essentially like what social media is in these instances, is the, you know, different efforts to win arguments.
Even with all that said, though, I felt like he missed the mark on at least the tone of which he said what he said. Now, he tried to clarify and he tried to say that. And so the initial quote that started making its way around Twitter or whatever was real bad, like all kinds of bad, right? And then, you know, you got like further clarification saying that like the ramifications that he was talking about weren't about what people thought they were in the first place, but about, like, Daryl Morey didn't quite understand what he was getting himself into by sending that tweet in the first place.
Which, or getting them into, more accurately.
Yes, that, right? That, like, too.
He's tweeting from the United States, and we're in China having to actually deal with the ramifications of this. And with the Lakers, a lot of their families traveled with them too. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like we're there. It's like we're there with our families. What is going to happen with this? So that was where LeBron was coming from, but it was very poorly worded. And whenever you have, like, 5-6 days to come up with an answer to something, and then you immediately have to clarify it, like, twice right afterward, for just purely, you know, putting aside the substance of the issue, which I do think we should get into, just from a strategic, like, messaging standpoint, they really fumbled that. And that's very rare for LeBron, who's a very calculated athlete in that respect.
I mean, my first response to it was, if this was going to be your response, you may as well have just said it in China. That probably would have made it might have made things better with the relations between the NBA and China in that spot. And that isn't, I don't think that's what he kind of wanted to accomplish here, is to appease China. I don't think, but just, like, kind of knowing what LeBron tends to stand for, I don't think that's what he was hoping to do here.
Does he have a moral obligation to speak on the substance of it? Before you answer that, I want to point out that it's fucking stupid that we looked at, you know how many people have business dealings with China in this country who never have to stand in front of media for media availability or anything like that? So with that caveat out of the way, we have chosen athletes and musicians and other people who have great cultural influences to be the voice and the leaders of this country in a lot of ways that I think are inappropriate. And by asking that question, I'm feeding into that. So there's an inherent hypocrisy in my question. But all of that said, do you think that LeBron has a moral obligation to not be like, hey, Morey, you know, don't tweet that while we're in China or about to go to China, and actually address the substance of the Hong Kong protests and the Uyghur, the concentration camps that they've been being put in, the Uyghur Muslims in, I believe, you know, in Western China. Like, does he have a responsibility to address that?
I'll answer that here in a second. Does LeBron have a greater responsibility than most athletes? No and yes. You know, yes and no.
All right, Darius. All right, talk to me about it.
Look, so first and foremost, just from, like, a purely fan of the game that we are paid to analyze perspective, at the pre-draft combine, there isn't an essay portion, right? Like, there isn't, and for some reason we treat athletes at this point as if there is an essay portion, as if there is a poli-sci portion of, you know, getting ready for the draft or getting ready to be an NBA player.
Can I interject real quick? What is LeBron's, like, on uninterrupted, what's their slogan, their motto?
More than an athlete. That's where the yes portion comes in, though.
Right. Like, that's the thing, is, like, he has placed himself as, like, more than just basketball is important to me. So anyway, continue.
Well, that's kind of the thing here, is, and the NBA in general has kind of put themselves in the spot where they have been able, look, in America, and I hate using this term because it's been kind of, it's almost an ironic or sarcastic term at this point, but the NBA has profited off of wokeness, right? It has profited off of activism and social standards and those things, right? And by setting that precedent, by puffing out their chest for their ability to do so, there's now a different expectation of them than your typical professional athlete. And then even by those standards, LeBron's even higher than that, because he's at the forefront of that idea. And as you said, he does have more than it. I wonder if that's going to change. Like, I wonder if he's like, if he's going to reconsider that at this point, because he has now seen the downside to that, where more is expected of him. Fair or not, because there is a case to be made here. Why should we expect a professional athlete to offer up a nuanced opinion on one of the most complicated issues facing geopolitics that you can find out there, right? Like, I don't, and that's kind of why we can get into some of the heart of the issue here. To me, this was as soon as it became Maury having to delete a tweet and apologize for whatever, and you had the NBA kind of, it very obviously seemed to have sent out a memo to everybody, hey, just say we don't know enough about the geopolitics here, we don't know what's going on. As soon as you started to see that, it became about a freedom of speech thing. And that's kind of where I'd like to get, that's where I would want to focus more on, especially from LeBron's perspective here, because that to me is where I think you have the fairest, even if it might not be objectively fair, but that's the fairest criticism here, is that for the sake of the bottom line, we are not going to offer up, as an entire league, we are not going to offer up our full-fledged thoughts on this. Do you understand kind of where I'm heading with that, or do you, how do you feel about it? Do you think he should have to answer these things?
I do, because he has put himself in that more than an athlete type of position, yeah. Right? There's a quote, he had quoted a Martin Luther King quote in 2018 on the 50-year anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination. And he quoted part of it, but I want to read the whole thing. This is from MLK's letter from Birmingham jail. And when they were doing the Freedom Riders around the South, and this is the whole quote. So the first part is the part that a lot of people know, is injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. The rest of it is more interesting to me than that part of the quote. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality tied to a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all directly. And so in this world, part of what LeBron, and again, it is dumb that LeBron is at the center of this when there are a lot more people with a lot more business interests making a lot more money than LeBron does in China. But that is the hub. They're the conversation starter for things like this. Our athletes, our entertainers. That line, we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, really resonates with me, because the world is so small now with the internet and with our ability to, somebody like LeBron's ability to capitalize globally. You know who hasn't been involved in this discussion at all is Kobe. Kobe hasn't, and I'm not trying to make this a Kobe versus LeBron thing, but Kobe's beloved in China, right? Mm-hmm. Kobe's smart, he ain't going to say anything about this, right? But when you profit off of, when you profit globally, and in LeBron's case, which is something that Kobe's never really done, in speaking up for social justice issues, it's easy when you do that and it's in your self-interest. Mm-hmm. But like, think of what Muhammad Ali did, right, with the Vietnam War, and being jailed, being stripped of his title, being stripped of the ability to make a living for years because he stood on principle. Very, very rarely do people behave that way. So I'm not upset with LeBron for acting the way that 99.9% of us would act if we were honest with ourselves. Like, LeBron has an empire. There's millions and millions and millions of dollars in China, not even discussing future billions. Possibilities.
With a B.
Billions. With a B. Yeah. And so, like, LeBron behaved how almost all of us would behave in that sort of situation. But if you are going to put yourself out there as being a person of principle and talking about how injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, you have to realize we are in that inescapable network of mutuality, and you do have to address those things. Like, it's not something you can dip your toe in the water. You either got to be in it or you got to be out.
Right. This isn't pulling aside Alex Caruso, whom we have never, I don't even know what he sounds like, honestly. but it's not like we're pulling aside Alex Caruso and demanding of him an essay on the politics of what's going on between China and Hong Kong. That's not what's going on. We are holding up an athlete, a superstar, to the expectations, to the precedent that he himself has set for he himself. And that's the portion of this that I think is the most important, the most relevant point that can be made when I say I thought his explanation, I thought his quote fell short. Like, that's the part that you can't, and it's not just even about setting the expectation and holding yourself up or whatever, but he's profited off of that expectation. And that even takes it a step further, in my opinion.
The one thing I will empathize with LeBron on in this is that he didn't pick this fight.
Yeah.
Guys like him, like all of the causes that he's taken up, and let's not act like he hasn't done a lot of really good stuff.
Absolutely.
Right. But all of the causes that he's taken up, he's been the person who's decided, I am picking this fight. This is what I'm going to do.
And those things have affected him personally, like on an individual level, right? The school stuff that he works with, the social injustice, the racial injustice, like those are things that he himself has said he has had to deal with. This isn't that.
And this is most of the things that we care about are things that have impacted us at one time or another individually. So that's true of both of us. He's got the money and the power to be able to do something about it. And good on him for doing that, right? This was not his fight to pick, right? But sometimes you find yourself in a fight that you did not necessarily pick. And if you're going to stand on those principles, then stand on them.
Yeah. If you're going to profit off of those principles, like that's that to me is an important thing to point out here, is that he has made a portion of his business by way of holding himself up as hashtag more than an athlete. And that's where, you know, he fell short a little tonight. Look, we are paid to talk about the Lakers, and the game that we would usually be analyzing featured basically nobody who we would normally want to talk about. But we are going to try to segue awkwardly here and kind of get back to some of the stuff that is facing the Lakers. And look, if to those who have been hopping into our mentions and offering up, you know, stuff that they went through and their informed opinions on what's going on. Like, I have learned a lot just by way of interacting with people who have done that. And I greatly appreciate it. So if you think that we fell short, even in this conversation itself, because look, I also kind of focus a lot more on this show than most just like Lakers straight shows, right? So even to I guess I'm hashtag more than a podcaster, right? And so if you guys feel like this conversation fell short, or you feel like we're pulling punches or whatever,
of course it fell short. Of course it fell short. Like we're figuring this out, and that's part of, like, this should be an interactive type of thing of people who care about this stuff. Like, I'm sure there are people who have turned this off by now, or like, please just talk friggin' basketball, right? But those of you who care about this stuff and who know something about some angle of it, many people have already, reach out to us. Like, this is, we're learning and having to talk about it, and that's from, I can't speak for you, but I'm sure it's similar. Like, having to like talk to thousands of people about something that you don't know that much about, but you know you have to talk about it, is, you know, it's a difficult position to be in. So please, if you got something, educate us.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a quick second here. We're going to segue awkwardly back to we got a bit of a Kuzma update. We got a bit of an Anthony Davis update. There was a trend to those updates that I found a little troubling, that made me a little nervous. I know, shocker.
Ooh, really? What?
I'm nervous about something. We'll talk a little bit about the game, and I don't think we're going to have time to answer any questions, but if we do, we'll get to them. So hang tight. We'll get to that here in a second. So in actual basketball news, we got some actual basketball news. And I don't say that to make light of the situation that's going on over there, right? And so I don't, just a bad joke, but we found out today, good news with Anthony Davis, that the MRI came back and it showed no ligament damage, just a straightforward strained thumb or sprained thumb,
sprained one sprain,
that he is day to day with, right? The one that I'm getting a little nervous about here is the Kuzma one. So, first, celebrate the fact that the more important player is okay. Second, it's not necessarily even just about the like Kuzma-specific injury, right? It's that we are getting that same, well, he's day-to-day, and as soon as he's ready to come back, he's going to come back and whatever, you know? And I just think that lines up the player for disaster. Not even disaster is a little dramatic, but disappointing the fan base is when you start saying, when you are reluctant to give any kind of a conclusive time frame as to when this player could or could not come back, like you are now setting up that player to carry the burden of expectation there while one of their hands is tied behind their back because they aren't going to come out and they aren't the expert on this. They aren't going to come out and say, well, my doctor told me I'm supposed to be out for this long. Remember, LeBron even had to do that. LeBron's camp had to do that last year where they said, no, actually, like we're looking at, I forget, it was like 3 or 4 additional weeks of recovering instead of saying it's day to day. Like if you're forcing that burden on the player, you are setting up that player for disappointment across the fan base. And I would have hoped that they learned their lesson, and it seems they haven't.
Yeah, I mean, with Kuz, at least we got something definitive in that he will be returning to practice. My understanding of how they handle things. Now, this was with the previous training staff, but the current trainer, Nina Shea, I believe is how it's pronounced. She was with South Bay for like 10 years. And so I believe that the protocol here is the same. You first start out with non-contact drills. Once you reach certain thresholds, you move on to 1-on-1, then 3-on-3, then 5-on-5, then you're cleared for practice. And then how long you stay at each of those levels depends on if you're able to clear certain physical thresholds. Mm-hmm. So there is some truth in the day-to-dayness of that. It's just a matter of, like, you know, that makes it sound like he could be back any day now, right?
Right.
Where, you know, if you can give an expected, like, or just even more clarity, he has to go through our protocol that usually takes, you know, 1 to 2 weeks. But that's and even then, you may be pinning yourself into some expectation there. But just leaving it at day to day makes it sound like he's coming back, you know, fairly soon.
Right. I mean, even if we got that, I'd be perfectly happy with them saying, okay, this is the next step in his rehab here. This is how long it usually takes players to clear this protocol and then to clear the next protocol and how many protocols after that, how many levels of rehabilitation he has to come following those things. Like that's all transparency that helps the player. Like that's the thing is, look, I would love to be able to know these things because it would make me literally better at my job. We would better be able to figure out, okay, this is how the Lakers have to get through at least the next 4 weeks or 5 weeks or 6 weeks, whatever. But from the perspective of a player, that's the part here that I think they aren't quite grasping, is that this makes the player's life a lot harder than it has to be. And sure. And I think that's where I would have hoped that they learned their lesson from LeBron and his camp, literally having to say, no, this is actually how long I'm going to be out. Because, you know, most people understand PR, all these things, like it's just about managing expectations. That's all it is. It's all about setting those expectations at a manageable level. And then whether you exceed those expectations, then you get to pat yourself on the back. And if you fall short of those expectations, you now have to explain why that is the case. And with this, they are setting expectations that are impossible to, A, they aren't tangible. They're impossible to define. And B, because they are so indefinable, they are now, like any fan is going to try to be more optimistic about, oh, Kuzma, he's practicing? Oh, he's going to be back, like tomorrow, yesterday sometime? Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. I would have hoped that they kind of addressed that. Let's say Kuzma misses, like, the first 2 weeks of the season.
Okay.
I think that puts him into like a mid-November return or like an early to mid-November return. Mm-hmm. How do the Lakers manage that? Is that something that makes you nervous or is it just like it is what it is?
it is what it is. It doesn't make me nervous. It's a bummer. Obviously, I'd prefer him to play all 82 and hit the ground running. He tweeted earlier that, you know, I miss being able to hoop. I can't wait to get back at it. Mm-hmm. I think they'll be all right, you know, especially with good news on AD, which we did not, you know, touch on too much. That's you know, really great to hear. It sounds like, you know, he should be ready by opening night. We've really missed his scoring ability and his playmaking. He's somebody that we haven't talked about a ton from a playmaking standpoint, but actually seeing the guards in action, the best playmaker of the bunch is Rondo, but he comes with a bunch of other issues, right?
Yeah.
Caruso is not a ball screen guy the way that they've been using him. We haven't seen Quinn Cook, but that's not really his game. You know, Avery Bradley is definitely not, you know, a playmaker. So having a guy who can score and pass, who is not necessarily a complete superstar and just like another dude who can do it, is really important. And we've missed Kuz in that respect. So I've always thought that it's going to take Kuz a little bit of time to get used to kind of this new, you know, this new construction of the roster. But even in the less than optimal version that I think he'll be coming off of an injury, trying to fit into this new team, we still miss him, and he could still bring a lot when he comes back. But if he misses a couple weeks, we'll be fine.
What helps is that the schedule to start is really easy.
Right.
Right. I would be a lot more nervous if we were going to miss Kuzma, or if the Lakers were going to miss Kuzma for the first 2 weeks of last year. Like, had you swapped the schedules out, then I would have been, now we got to, the Lakers have a huge hole to dig themselves out of. I don't think that's going to be the case here. I do think the thing that I would have liked to have seen is to have him have some kind of a defined role. What's he actually going to do? Is he going to come out? You know, we all kind of believe that he's going to come off the bench. But we kind of thought that last year, and that wasn't the case. So, you know, I would have liked to have seen him kind of have some more time here to figure out what role he was going to play, because that's going to be, you know, like we talked about protocols, right? The first step is defining his role, and then the second step is allowing himself to fit into that role. And now we're gonna have to push this back, because first he needs to define it. We don't know what he's actually going to do. Let's go back to AD, though. That is the by far and away, even while LeBron kind of kicked up a bunch of dirt that we were hoping was behind us, but Anthony Davis being okay is some incredible news. Hands can be tricky. We saw this last year with Rajon Rondo, where he reached in and broke his hand and missed, what, like 2 months or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
So we're thrilled that that isn't the case. I kind of wanted to talk to you about, I want to know if you've noticed this too, where like Anthony Davis stubs his toe, and the sentiment from everywhere other than Lakers Twitter is, oh, there he is. Injury, Anthony Data Davis. Here we go again. And it almost felt like, especially with that one guy from The Athletic, it almost felt like that was a celebratory thing from that guy.
Yeah, a little bit.
and like, I don't know. I wanted to ask if you've noticed it. And B, like, is that something that's going to go anywhere anytime soon?
No, man. They're bitter that, you know, the best player in franchise history gave them seven great years, and then told them that he wanted to leave, had the courtesy to do that in a year and a half in advance so that they could get something back for him, the ungrateful fucks. the whole vibe around it, man, is like, it's not cool at all, right? Like, he's not your possession. And the rules of the NBA dictated that he'd be there basically for those 7 years. Yeah. And y'all didn't do shit with him. So this whole, like, we're celebrating this guy possibly, like, oh, man, they were so ready for it. And they're like,
the Ringer celebration wrote an entire article saying that the Lakers might be screwed.
They included my tweet in that shit, too. And just like the whole premise, and just like, oh yeah, this random dude on Twitter says like he might have the same injury Drew Brees does.
Injury expert.
Right. Of course. Well, that's how you know he's an expert, obviously. Yeah, right. And then, like, Shams had tweeted out, like, you know, initial tests indicate that it's a grade one. Is that anywhere in the Ringer's thing?
No.
And then, like, they're like, no, we don't have an anti-Lakers bias. Hello? Like, you don't think that, like...
Check who your boss is.
Right, like Bill Simmons and then Justin Verrier. And, like, you don't think that pervades your coverage of it? Anyway, it's just, like, the whole... It's been really eye-opening, the beginning of the season, the level to which, like, the bullshit surrounds the Lakers. Like, the Lakers were easy to make fun of for the last 7 years. So, yeah, Lakers.
I made a career out of it.
Right. But the degree to which, like, people are really, like, super ready to jump on, like, everything is awful and bad and, like, haha, Anthony Davis got hurt. Like, really? That's your attitude about right. it? Or the Lakers are screwed in some way, or Lonzo Ball shoots, you know, Lonzo was average, put up like 9, 7, and 5 in 24 minutes, is shooting like 32% from three. He's putting up like the identical numbers mm-hmm. to what he did with the Lakers. And, but now it's like every highlight, every time he makes a shot, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, he left the Lakers and now he knows how to play basketball again. Like, shut the fuck up.
I agree with all of those sentiments to the nth degree. And here's my thing. Like, we kind of, like, we knew what we were getting ourselves into here. Just like Laker fans are going to be all the more loud about the team potentially being good, NBA Twitter was always going to be all the more loud because of that, or as a result of trying to match that energy. So, like, I kind of understood what we were kind of getting ourselves into here. But here's my problem with especially the Davis injury stuff. From a general NBA fan perspective, losing a top five, a top 10 player in any given year sucks. And why would anybody celebrate that in any way, shape, or form? I don't even care what he did to my franchise. Like, if I was a Miami fan and LeBron went somewhere else and he got hurt, and I'd say, oh, man, but that means I don't get to watch LeBron for an entire year. Like, we saw this a lot last year where LeBron was out for a quarter of the season and LeBron wasn't in the playoffs. And a very upswelling sentiment was, oh, man, I just... These playoffs would have been like, these playoffs are great. It would have been even better had LeBron been involved in them.
And it's a loss for the whole league.
It is. And that's where, you know, maybe I consider myself more of an NBA fan. I'd say 50-50. I care deeply about the Lakers, but I also care deeply about this entire league. It's in the best place it's ever been. And, like, rooting or celebrating or even just, like, giving a smarmy response that I saw is just... It's just horseshit. It's not the way that you should. It's not the way you should view the league, and quite frankly, it's not the way you should view humanity. Because these people are human beings, and that's like, imagine wishing actual harm on somebody because of a decision that person made that they didn't want to play in your city anymore. Now, I have done it. I have said something really dumb about Chris Paul once upon a time where I said that, you know, he's gonna pull a hammy in the finals, and I regretted it immediately. It was an asshole, dickish thing of me to say. And I would hope that the person who did that, I forget the guy's name from The Athletic, I would hope that he at least regrets it. I saw he took down the tweet or whatever, but I hope he regrets it and, like, actually regrets it and wasn't just told, hey, man, you got to take this down because we at The Athletic are, like, we are at the forefront of hashtag press on. So, like, that can't represent us. So, yeah, I thought that was a bummer. I thought that was a real bummer. And I knew going into this what kind of awaited us on the other side of the Lakers being good. I kind of hoped that it wouldn't get to this point. I hope that we'd be better at it so it wouldn't get to this specific point where we're now rooting somehow for injuries.
I mean, yeah, what more is there to say?
Yeah. All right, let's talk really quickly about the actual basketball that was played. Honestly, you and I started recording before the Lakers. Have you seen the final? I haven't seen the final yet. They were
Yeah, no, we won a 10. Ah, crap.
Championship.
104-98.
So
Zach Norvell hooping. Dwight slinging the rock, dude, all over the place. Where did that come from?
It wasn't even just like straightforward. like, that guy's wide open, I got to get him the ball kind of passes. Like, he had a couple backdoor bounce passes that looked really good. He had a couple high-low passes that looked really good. It's like, man, if you could have done that with Powell, the Lakers would have been unstoppable. But
Dwight's been interesting in that, like, sometimes when a guy – so he's clearly not the athlete that he once was. Mm-hmm. But – and sometimes, like, that's really hard for a guy to make any adjustment to, like, oh, I used to be able to do this thing, and now I can't do that thing anymore. Smith. He looks like, yeah, he looks like a guy who's like very comfortable. Like, he's limited in what he can do. And there are going to be some times where the Lakers can't play him due to a decreased degree of mobility. But like, he's been good at the things that he's capable of doing.
Yeah.
And he's fit right in terms, you know, like, he's playing a tiny Golden State team tonight, right? And he did what he's supposed to do and dominate the boards. But just overall in the preseason, like, he's not as capable as he once was, but he's done what he can do.
Yeah. I really liked what we saw from Dwight, including the hair. The hair looks way better than whatever he was trying to do before. Even while it's insane. It kind of reminds me of those, like, visors with, like, the bleach tips that like, old dudes who are balding wear. But I don't know anything. I'm an old man when it comes to hair. Let's really quickly touch on Zach Norvell. He is the kind of latest player who has no expectations and outstrips those expectations. But did you see anything there? I don't think, obviously, if he does anything to help the Lakers this season, something went really, really wrong. It's just Disney movie on steroids well for Norvell. But what did you see from him that you liked or whatever? What made him successful?
I mean, you know, that highlight of him crossing up poor Jordan Poole is, you know, indicative of indicative of a level of handles that's good to see out of a guy like Norvell. Mm-hmm. He was fine defensively, which is probably the biggest reason why he wasn't drafted. He can shoot. He's a good shooter. He's one of those guys, we've talked about this with Caruso, that you go like, I'd like to see him in a real basketball game with the real rotation players against real opponents, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that's something that on a two-way contract, he should be given that opportunity. But the Lakers are going to need shooting, and he's somebody that, you know, he can do that. So he's someone I would love to see just get increased responsibility because he looked really good out there tonight.
Yeah, I wouldn't predict that he gets that, right? Because, like, we're already wishing for that with Alex Caruso, and he's been in that spot for now 2 years. Like, we're probably 2 years away from Norvell getting the type of shot that we would maybe like to see from him. But I will say that, like, from his game, the thing that I really liked about him is that, because he isn't the quickest player out there. Mm-hmm. But I like guys who, despite not being the quickest player out there, understand how to be shifty and understand how to move defenders. And that play with Poole was a perfect example of understanding how to get Poole leaning and then using whatever quickness he has to go back the other way. And I think that's a great
place. Yeah, that was a great job attacking that closeout.
Yeah, it's a great place absolutely. Start for where he is athletically. But it's a cool story.
Yeah.
I think that'll do it. I think that'll just about settle up this this podcast here. Not nearly enough time to answer a question, but thank you again to those of you who are sending those in. I'll try to get to a couple of those as well as over the course of the week. We have a free day tomorrow, so we can do that then.
Let's hope we don't have to use the word geopolitical in a future podcast episode anytime soon.
I just jinxed it. We aren't going to have a free day tomorrow. We're going to have to talk about the response to the response to the response tomorrow. So that's fine. That'll be great. That'll do it, though, for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Again, if you guys have any questions that you guys want covered on the show, you guys asked some really good questions, actually, about the entire China situation. I greatly appreciated those. So if you guys want those covered or any subject covered, send that in the form of a 5-star review. We are ramping up as we get ready for the season. Are we within? We're nearing what? We're just about a week away from the NBA actually being in its regular season. So that's kind of fun.
That's right.
So make sure you guys continue to hit that subscribe button and get everybody ready for what should still be an exciting season, especially now that we know Davis will probably be healthy for the start of it, knock on wood. Have a great rest of your day, though. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Shouts to Zach Norvell.